Thursday, February 11, 2021. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. And there really isn't much more about living a better life than betting on the Super Bowl. I mean, boy, I mean, it's not only is it like a time-honored tradition for sports bettors, the Super Bowl is rooted in the beginnings of the Better Life podcast. I've told that story enough times, and it was a good Super Bowl for me. I hope it was one for you. I know a lot of people had Chiefs -3. Hopefully you were like me and did not get into the side or the total. I had Ronald Jones over 34.5 rushing yards. I had him at 37.5 rushing yards. And I had Antonio Brown under 6 receptions. That's right. I found an out that had under 6 receptions available. Took that. Those were my two substantial positions that I had. Both got there, both cashed. So it was a nice Super Bowl for me. Even hit a reverse on the Super Bowl squares. I normally don't do Super Bowl squares. I did one to support someone's son's youth football team or something like that, and so I went back after the game like, oh, that's right, I did these squares, and I was looking at it and I hit a reverse, so it's kind of nice. Let's get into this week's interview. Mr. Drew Dinsick, you might know him on Twitter as whale_capper is his handle on Twitter. He was nice enough to join me via, we did a little Twitch stream. The first time that I've done an interview via Twitch, handful of you tuned into that. Thank you so much. Twitch.tv/TheBetterLife, testing out, what I want to do over there. I've done a handful of different things, and I found a casino game that I might be, play on there, for streams and such, but I'll get to that. I'll talk more about that after the interview. Drew Dinsick, he is the co-host of the Deep Dive podcast. He is he would identify as a rec plus better, as a topic we discuss here. Of course we talk about his beginnings in gambling, but, we also discuss the importance of stoicism when you're having a losing day, and you know, not letting that impact the relationships around you. Talk about creating content for the Rec Plus Bettors and a number of other things. And I'm gonna have to ask you to forgive me for the first like couple minutes of the interview. Go ahead and laugh, everybody. You know, Bogan, John, the rest of you can give me shit over Twitter. I plugged in a new device to my computer, and of course that thing, everything I plug into my damn computer has a microphone. Why is that? And of course, it took me a couple minutes to realize that the microphone on my webcam was recording, which is definitely not what I intended. So it took a couple minutes for me to realize that and switch it over. So please do forgive me for that snafu. But without further ado, Mr. Drew Dinsick. Here we are. Drew Dinsick, co-host of the Deep Dive podcast. What a rise that has been. I mean, look, if I can gush about you just a little bit, if I can toot your horn just a little bit, I think you'll let me do this. I remember years ago, Whale Capper was this Twitter handle I saw floating around the space. And then it seemed like out of nowhere, now he's this face I see everywhere. Drew Dinsick is being mentioned by everybody. In Gil's absence, you're hosting a numbers game. Is that what's happening?
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. That, I think maybe 10, 20 years ago, you have a conversation with someone, you're talking about, oh my God, you see like Mega Millions is like $1 billion. Like, let's go buy these tickets. And then like your head gets all high, you're like, oh my gosh, we're going to win this. What are you going to do with all the money? What are you going to do when you have the money? And I remember having these kind of, high conversations and being like, oh, I would get into sports talk radio. Like that would be so fun. I would just do that for fun. Like I would love it. And then, flash forward to like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, the bar of entry to create your own content got so, so low and appealing, and the type of gambling content that I really wanted to hear as I was getting more serious as a gambler, it just didn't exist really. And so we started creating our own. And then now to, at this point, get the opportunity to be a guest host on like such a widely appreciated and syndicated program and get like into the guts of what it is and to be into like live broadcast radio and television. It's like, it's surreal. It is so cool that this is kind of the way it's broken down. And credit really to just being somewhat early and just throwing stuff out there, trying stuff, you know, being, you know, just being a little aggressive and seeing what works. And then, you know, we figured out, you know, at least a, you know, decent way to kind of hit a very niche audience of people who aren't just your, you know, your average recreational better, but have stuck with it for a couple of years and have some real, like, a drive and an interest in like higher quality stuff. And we're trying to meet that demand. So it's amazing and surreal that it's played out this way. But getting to host Gil's show today was pretty awesome, I gotta say.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up all of that, because all of that is something I want to talk to you about. I think, but Drew, we need to start this conversation. We start all these conversations. Bring us back to that first time you remember seeing gambling happen. The first time you were exposed to gambling. I don't know if you can, if your memory is that good or can serve you, but this is the better life, and this all starts somewhere. Where did it start for you?
It does. The first time I ever was exposed to gambling and what it was, I won $1 off my grandfather on the Bills and the Cowboys in the first Super Bowl in like 1991, I want to say. I had just gotten I think it was the first of the two Super Bowls, 91. And it's the start of the dynasty. And, you know, my it was Super Bowl 30, I want to say. Oh, no, that was the end of the dynasty. That was the last Cowboys Super Bowl. So this was 1991. They smashed the Bills in the Super Bowl. I can't remember why my grandpa was into the Bills. He was high on them, and I don't even remember why I loved the Cowboys. I think it was just the star on the helmet. Probably I was maybe. I think I was 8, 9, and he was like, "All right, I'll bet you $1 that the Bills win and the Cowboys win, you get the dollar." And after the game was over, he took out the marker, wrote on the back of it, and I just kind of like put it in my little keeping chest, and I still have that. So I still have the dollar I won from my grandfather back in 1991, and then I didn't make another bet for real deal money until like 2001. But that was my first experience
for real deal money. A dollar wasn't real deal at the time.
Well, I guess, yeah, when you're 8, it is. Yeah, I could have bought some, you know, like 20 pieces of gum, a matchbox car. I think $1 went pretty far back in 1991.
You know, they say that the worst thing you can do when you start gambling is win, right? Like, that's yeah. I mean, like, were you hooked? Do you remember, like, as a kid thinking, holy smokes, I can, like, make, like, I can win money just off of something happening? Like, did it dawn on you at that moment?
I don't think I really had a lot of nothing to do with the money. So I don't think the money part made as much of an impression as just the winning. I really wanted to win. I was a competitive swimmer as a youth. Okay. And like literally like a 2-year cycle, like you're a Northern Virginia guy. Northern Virginia swimming is massive, like country club swimming. There are so many different pools and clubs, and it's a really big deal. And I was way into it as a kid. And you have 2-year increments, like seven and eight year olds, 9 and 10 year olds compete against each other, 11, 12 year olds and 13, 14 year olds, whatever. But like when I was at the bottom of the age group and I was losing, I was like a wreck. And then the next year I would be at the top of the age group and winning, and I was like on top of the world. And so I had a very competitive spirit. I really wanted to win. And I think more than even just for the money, like the fact that I got a win out of it was huge. And, I think that's not uncommon among us and, you know, our generation of men, probably having that competitive spirit is pretty common. A lot of people probably relate to that, but, I wanted to be the best. I wanted to win. I wouldn't settle for second place in athletic endeavors. And, that's translated into the gambling space.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was dating a young lady in Sacramento shortly after I got out of the Marine Corps, and I started getting into sports betting a little more heavily. And I remember telling her, I just want to be right. Yeah. Right. Like the money's cool, right? That's the measurement of success, but like, it's a cerebral exercise, right? To look at all this stuff. And if there's something at the, like, if there's something about looking, seeing a line, seeing value, and then it playing out the way you thought it would, or it lands, and thinking, I made the right decision there, right? So yep. Absolutely, there's definitely that competitive sense to it. So you said in 2001 when you start making real money, like what does that look like? Do you like you open up a Bodog account? Like what where were you
sportsbook.com. I'm not joking.
Totally legit. Sportsbook.com. Yeah.
Sportsbook.com. I was a sophomore in college and guy my fraternity 2 years older than me, was heavy duty into college basketball betting. Didn't really talk about it much. And I had a dartboard in my room. He would come in like late night and, you know, when games were on, we would throw darts. And he would basically just talk to me about what he was betting on. And I was always kind of like, oh, yeah, that's cool that you can bet on college basketball. That's cool. I've never really thought of that. And then one night he was like, oh, my gosh, the books, man, they don't understand how good Long Beach State is. They're going up against Pepperdine. They got them like 3-point dogs. They should be 3-point favorites. And he made such a compelling case that I was like, all right, I've heard you talk about this enough. Like, I'm opening an account. I'm going to figure this out. Log on to sportsbook.com. Put my debit card in, put $100 on in the account, put $100 on Long Beach State that night. They win. Yeah. My buddy's right. They win. It goes, you know, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, this is so crazy. It's that so easy.
That easy.
You're kidding me. And yeah, so from that point, I knew that, you know, online gaming was possible. And you know, I had some family Patriots fans connection that, you know, I was way into the Patriots back in like the Drew Bledsoe days. And then Tom Brady comes in for Drew Bledsoe in year one and they make the playoffs and they win the snow game. And I was like, team of destiny, team of destiny. They're going to win the Super Bowl,
right?
I'm making some future plays. I'm betting them in every game. You know, it was very much a, you know, survivorship bias sort of experience where I was betting on the Patriots because I loved them and they were winning and rewarding me. And I thought I completely masked whether I was skill or luck, especially considering, you know, like the Tuck Rule game and like how close thin the margins were in the Super Bowl against the Rams. And yeah, that was the first Super Bowl I ever bet on, was Rams Patriots, you know, for online at least money, besides the dollar bet with my grandfather. And yeah, and I went and cashed out at the time, and they made it very, 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 very tough on you to get your money back. Yeah. They delayed and delayed and delayed you, and then eventually send you this super sketchy looking check. And I was like,
"So you got a physical? You go as far back as getting a physical check?
Oh yeah,
I mean, that is back there. When I opened up my Five Dimes account, and I mean, look, I opened a bunch of accounts. It took a while before I ever had enough to ever withdraw. Right?
Sure.
But like, that was the time of like Western Union, right? They tried to like try to wire you money that way. I had never received a check. So you got a, like, was it a written check?
Yeah, it was a physical check. It was printed. It was printed out like a business check, but it came from a Chinese holding company, and it looked completely, it looked completely illegal. Like it looked like all the red flags in the world. But
like, there's no way the IRS is not tracking this.
I needed that money because I had told my friends like, hey, I just won on the Super Bowl. Like I'm coming with you guys to spring break.
Right.
You know, like I got money now. Like I'm coming with you we're going to the Bahamas. We're going to Nassau. Like, yeah, this is happening. And, yeah, and then it takes forever for you to get it. It was like a month. They expect you to lose it all back and then not actually have to write you the check. Like, right. That's the way it used to, that was right. The scam back in the day. And then when I finally did get it, it was like, it looked so fake that, you know, it was like, I didn't know if I was going to get arrested when I walked to the bank to cash it, to deposit it. But they took it. It was legal. It was legal tender. It went in. My
it was legal funded. Tender.
It all went through. I paid massive fees to get it. Obviously, I think the cash out fees were like almost, you know, they were, it was insane. But yeah, then, you know, got to pay for a trip to the Bahamas. And of course the gambling didn't stop there because in the Bahamas, it's legal. And in the Bahamas, you only had to be 18.
Yeah.
You don't have to be 21 like you do in Vegas.
Yeah.
And the Atlantis had a casino. And at the time, the Marriott had a casino.
What was your game?
You're not going to believe.
Were you throwing dice? What were we doing?
I did not know the rules to dice. Okay. I did not know basic strategy blackjack. I did not know the rules to dice. I could, however, play roulette and picking. We were picking thirds and pick two of the thirds, you know, on like the, you know, the first top third, middle third, or the bottom third. If you were on the long side of the roulette table, or if you were at the end, you would go first column, second column, third column, and just pick two of the three and hope that, you know, it doesn't land on green. And, you know, it was a fun way to spend spring break for sure. Was when we weren't at the clubs and the bars and whatever. But for sure I got wiped out. Like day two, I had no cash left. Right. And I had a credit card that my parents had given me for emergencies. And I was like, okay, I can't get cash off of this, but I can go to, like, we're going to lunch. Yeah. I'm buying everyone lunch and you guys give me cash. and then we're going back to the casino tonight. I'm going to win that money back. And then here's the final. So this is Nassau, Bahamas.
Right.
And you had two choices when you wanted to go home. You could get a cab and that was like $7. Or you could wait until the bus started and the bus was $1 to ride home. And if you got to like 3 a.m, 4 a.m, you were like, man, the trade-off, you know, like, do I pay $7 now or do I just wait till like 6?
Yeah.
And then I can get home for $1. You know, like, these are literally decisions that I'm making. I'm like, oh, I'm going to wait till 6. And, you know, of course they had the Sigma Derby at the Marriott Casino with the horses. And you know, so I have $5, not $7 to get a cab, but $5. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to change these for quarters and I can play down until I have $1 left so I can get on the bus to get the bus right home.
Right.
And so they were just from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m, drinking free coffee and water, you know, and playing Sigma Derby. Until 6 a.m. we can get the bus.
That's
and
awesome.
We did that like 3 or 4 days in a row on that vacation, and I came home with no money.
Well, the audience, there's a special place in our heart for Sigma Derby. A lot of recreational casino goers in the audience, and I think everybody at some point or another has decided they're going to see what the electronic horse is going to do for them. So you know, one of the things that I've been following the deep dive for a while now. I'll admit that I just started listening on a regular basis this season. So impressed. I went back and started listening to some of the older evergreen stuff that you guys did. And I love how well that stuff holds up. Let's start with, you did your interview with Preston Johnson. I think what, over the summer this time, or was it, I think it was over the summer in 2020, or maybe it was even sooner than that. Maybe it was 2019. But you did your episode with Preston Johnson, and it was funny listening to you like, admire him and the impact that he had you on a better. And I think it's interesting that you're now having that same impact on who you were at the time that you started following Preston Johnson at Sports Cheetah. I mean, tell me about that transformation. You go from being a fan to having fans, and how does it feel, seem kind of surreal that now you're sort of one of them, if that makes sense?
I try to stay extremely grounded. Even hearing you say fan out loud is like, no, that's not what this is. No, it's like, I think of it much more as just like you're trying to build out a network, you know, you're trying to build out, you know, connections in this space. The longer you play, the more you experience, you accrue, the quicker and the faster you realize how valuable experience itself is. And so anyone above you in terms of years played, in terms of lessons learned, knows something that you don't. And whatever you can kind of learn and glean from them is important. And someone like Cheetah, who is, you know, he was three, four years, a little bit ahead of me in a cycle in terms of, you know, like limit betting and, you know, building betting, you know, relationships and, you know, just playing at a serious level, you know, learning from him through observation and then through networking and talking to him and asking questions and stuff has been invaluable. And it is kind of funny because for sure that's, I think, maybe the second or third person I ever followed on Twitter. And it was just because I had a friend at the time that was friends with him who was a serious bettor, and he was like, oh yeah, this guy's one of the best follows, and he's running free contests and all kinds of great tips between the lines. And I'm sure half of it I read, it went right over my head just because I didn't know what I was really reading or listening to, and he's trying out different types of content and stuff like that. And it was cool to have someone help kind of lay the groundwork for a way to share things publicly, because there's no grad school for sports betting. Yeah. You can't go to some mentorship program and really kind of cut your teeth in a curated way. You just have to kind of learn the hard way. And so any kind of shortcuts you can take by building out a social network is huge. And for sure today, a ton of people that I've met in the years since we had, started creating a podcast and curating an audience, there's been people that have come along out of the blue that have asked me questions. And then, I can tell just from a couple of back and forth, like, okay, this is a point of view that's not really well represented in my network. It's important to, talk to the sport person more. Let's bring them into a group chat. Let's pick their brain a little bit about stuff. Let's share some of our information and see if they, if it's a good, creative, team working effort here. And anyone that would come and be like, hey man, I'm a huge fan. I'd first thing I'd be like, I appreciate that. Thank you. But like, if you have a serious interest in this and, you're going to grind and get information and you share that information, then, we can be friends, not fan,
right?
Not yeah. fan content creator,
Well, I think, I use the word fan because it's, the easiest to apply here. But I think in our community, it's that we don't say fan, but we say I'm a huge follower, right? I follow all of your stuff, right? And that might as well be synonymous with fan in that sense. Gil Alexander was one of the first people that I started following way back when he was doing the Betting Dork podcast. And if anybody's familiar with that podcast,
I don't know about that. That's funny.
That'll tell you how far back that relationship goes. And my audience, makes fun of me because I mention Gil often and the cool friendship I have with him, but there's something even about just making those connections, just to be able to ask a question, right? Yeah. Like I'm sure. Years ago, and I still do it now, if I see a line and I'm like, I'm not good enough at this to know if this is right. I remember I don't remember what week of the season it was, but one of my outs had the Redskins at the Washington football team at 8-1 to win the division when it was like tied up, right? When the whole thing was, and like I remember looking at it like, that can't be right, like that number can't. But in my head I'm thinking, maybe they're out of quarterbacks and I don't, like, maybe they woke up and all of their quarterbacks are broken, right? Like, what's the, and so I text Gil. I was like, is this good? He's like, that's a great bet. And I'm it's nice being able to have, at the very least, someone that is a little more experienced, a little more seasoned, or a little more informed, if anything, to ask these questions. When you started becoming more prominent in sports betting, it's clearly not just part of your identity, but it's part of your persona now. How did your family respond to that?
Oh man, I'm trying to remember right now. They were always kind of like, I have a younger brother and he is a great, great guy, a great friend. Even though we are separated by about 5 years, we are still very friendly. He still lives in the East Coast, got a young family. And I think the first time I told him, I was like, hey, by the way, I got this like social media presence and I'm doing a podcast and we're getting like a couple thousand people are listening to this. And he was like, about sports betting? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, I mean, should I put money in an account now? You're gonna make me rich? Like, that was kind of the reaction. And I was like, yeah, well, it's not really like that, like you're just trying to grind out a little bit of an edge here. Like, no one really gets rich doing this. But yeah, I mean, it's if you want to follow along, it's fun. It's a fun way to participate and be a recreational player. It's fun. And that was, I think, the first reaction I got from family. And then eventually I think I told my parents at the point where it was like starting to get serious and I was getting interesting offers from like major media players. And I was like, okay, this is, I better just have like a heart to heart with them about how serious I am about this. Actually, you know what it was? It was even like, oh, Andy and I are going to do a halftime show and it on Christmas, you know, for the NFL. And it was like, wait, what are you doing? Yeah. And it's like, yeah, you know, it's a betting, program. People are really into it. We're having fun doing it. And, people are, people really, care for this stuff and we like making it and it's fun. And I think at the time they were like, okay, well, we're a little nervous. Like, don't do anything stupid. If it impacts your job, don't get in trouble with your work. Like that sort of like, caring parent stuff for sure. Yeah. And then at some point, I think it was this summer before the NBA restart happened, get a call from NBC Sports to do NBA betting content for them, like little, NBC, branded, preview videos and stuff. And I sent that to my parents and they were like, oh, this is serious. They were like, we thought you were just kind of a degenerate and just like, wasting money and time. But you NBC like made a call to you, like what? and that was pretty fun and validating.
Like
with
the Peacock logo. NBC.
What NBC are you talking that? And I send them those logos. Same for my in-laws, my wife's folks. Same sort of deal. Like they were like, yeah, we knew it was a hobby, but like. What? Like they're paying you to make content? Like, huh? And it's funny, you always have, if you're heavy duty into betting and you have a lot of experiences, it's always fun to talk to people at parties and, you have stories. People are interested in that, but they're always kind of, definitely before PASPA, they would always kind of look at you like, okay, well, this guy's a degenerate, like whatever. But then, now that it's, relatively acceptable, people are interested themselves in what's going on. The reception is very different. Conversations have a very different tone. It was always fairly well received. I've never really had anyone in my life who was like, I'm concerned about how much time you spend doing this, which, but I think people understand that, like, I have decent balance in my life and, I have a lot of interests, and this happens to be, going back to your comment about PASPA and, with the day it was repealed, like I was in the right place at the right time. Like I was building something that I thought was fun, didn't know if it was ever going to be worth anything. And then bang, like the next day it's like, oh, actually, this is a property that has real value down the road that I need to continue to nurture and grow.
I was fortunate enough to actually be in the room, in the Supreme Court when,
that's cool.
And I remember leaving there thinking, this is actually going to happen, right? Yeah. Like, of course I can't think of his name, New Jersey governor. Why can't I think of
Chris
his name? Yeah. Chris Christie. I mean, I was like, he fought all the way to this point. And in my head, I was thinking, but the reason he's here is because it hasn't worked yet, right? The reason it's gotten to this level is because it has. And I remember thinking, what are the chances that this is just as futile as the other efforts? But then I was like, but it's the Supreme Court, and state rights really matters with this court.
Sure.
And I remember thinking, and then when I left, I was like, man, the state rights argument was really solid there. Like, look, if Nevada can do this, the rest of the states have to be able to do it too.
It's come so far from the Wild West of the early 2000s, and the sites that I was playing on after sportsbook.com that came and went, that were insolvent and scams, and that the hustling bonuses in the net teller and stuff that we were doing back then, is just, it was so the Wild West. And for it to now have the stability and the very clear, longevity, of an industry now that we are probably a year away from $1 billion handle on legal handle on the Super Bowl,
legal,
which is mind blowing. that it, we've gotten here this fast and that there's this much of an appetite for it. And the fact that it's that we're talking about as much money as we're talking about is just greasing the wheels to get things done that much quicker. And coronavirus, the budget shortfalls at state and local levels is just going to, again, kind of incentivize everyone to get their act together on this, because the reasons that they were, that it was not, you know, really permitted illegal in the first place, they weren't based on, common sense. It was all political nonsense. And, the minute that, the dollar signs become clear, and the barriers are lifted, this is just going to absolutely explode.
Do you think, when states start realizing, like when, like the New Jerseys, the Iowas, the, these states that already had pretty good gambling going on, just no sports betting, when other states that are adopting sports betting, where maybe gambling wasn't as, Virginia is a really great example, right? There's no casinos. And all of a sudden, we're getting five casinos in, starting in 2022. We're getting 12 to 15 operators to bet on sports. When are states going to realize, oh, snap, we should have done this online poker thing a long time ago because gamblers will give us money? Do you think online poker is on the heels of sports betting?
I can't see why not. I mean, there's really, again, there's not common sense reasons not to do it. And, the fact, and there's only so many ways you can kind of create new revenue streams out of whole cloth. And I would guess that, once they kind of digest, cause it's all connected, same people, you got somebody winning against you betting sports, the next thing they're giving it back playing blackjack online and roulette online and then poker and vice versa. People winning at poker come and make sports bets and give it back there. Like it's all entertainment dollars. And it's going to be spent in some way. And if you want to try to capture, some hold by having a regulated marketplace for it, then you absolutely need to get in the game.
I mean, what a better leak to get that back than having a rake, right? Than having that constant poker rake,
Yeah.
So when did you realize? You said in 2001 is where, sportsbook.com, you're hitting these, you're finally making money that can be withdrawn from an account. When did you realize that, oh snap, I can do this a little bit more seriously?
I had a decent chunk at worldsportsexchange.com when that went sideways. And I can't exactly remember how that all went down, what was going on there, but it went insolvent and I never got my money back from that. And that kind of soured me to, okay, well, there's no point in putting real skin in the game. Because it was, I wasn't interested in trying to track down like a local bookmaker. I wasn't trying to play on credit. I was a little bit, I was conservative in that regard. I was only willing to put my entertainment dollars on the table to do it, but I wasn't going to be serious about it if I didn't at least have some sense that the book itself was going to be solvent in 2-3 years. Right. And in 2014, I want to guess, it felt like, okay, there's a couple of entities now, Dimes, Bovada, Bet Online to a degree. Like they were a bookmaker, was around at the time. Like they were pretty clearly like stable entities and they were getting heavy duty action through the US clientele. And it was growing and it was popular on Twitter. And it was, there was sort of a, one of these books does something sideways, we have sort of a, sports book review mechanism to arbiter this. And or we can take it to the court of public opinion if you're getting screwed by someone, right? There was a lot of ways where there was like kind of a veil of security around it. Or, it wasn't going away. It wasn't just going to up and disappear. There wasn't going to be insolvency overnight. And so I started getting more into it at that point and got, got again, kind of had survivorship bias, got real, you know, real lucky with a handful of NFL plays that I just look back and I'm like, I was making minus EV bets week in, week out, and I was getting lucky and I know it. And you go through the roller coaster of turn $1,000 into $5,000 and you're like, it's this easy. I'm good at this. I can't lose. And then, you know, I very clearly remember wiping out like 4K over 2 days or 3 days while I was on vacation in Hawaii over Thanksgiving with my family and just being a miserable wreck. And at that point, I was like, okay, if I'm going to be betting serious dollars now and ups and downs are going to be this serious, I need to have a lot more discipline and bankroll management and a plan. And I need to actually make my own numbers. I can't just be firing with my gut, and I need to learn from people who are better than me. So I stop losing because this is ridiculous. And I think over 2015 to the 2018 time window, it was just a growing learning experience from that point in time. And by the time I got to the end of 2028, you know what was actually made a huge difference is, like, again, I was never really interested in playing on credit. I was never really interested in sort of the runaround of, you know, getting a bunch of accounts across a bunch of books and trying to grind out a profit that way. But I was, you know, I was all of a sudden not worried about a bankroll because Bitcoin went through the freaking, through the ceiling. And I had an experience in 2017 where I had a very strong NFL season. I think to that point in my life, it was the most consistent. It's getting closing line value. I was winning week in, week out. There wasn't highs and lows, 7-1, 1-7 type of weekends. It was like, it was good, solid, winning. And I was like, okay, I can sustain this. But I deposited all into Bookmaker. I was almost exclusively playing there. I deposited with Bitcoin at the front end of the season. And then when I withdrew at the end, even though I had this great year, I had less Bitcoin because of the price increase had been so ridiculous. And I was like, that was like a wake up moment, like, holy crap. Like, this is, you know, forget entertainment. Like, there, you know, there is something really, wild going on here. And that was the year before it hit all time highs at like 20K or whatever. Right. So this was, so at that point I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to people. I'm going to learn about this. I'm going to buy, you know, the dips with some of my, just do what I can to accrue this and ride the ride up. And through 2017, it was like surreal. And at that point I had, enough of a bankroll for sports betting seriously, that was when I was, really interested in going, getting more, serious, limit betting NFL and, betting close to post in NBA and, coming up with a couple of betting partnerships and things like that. So it was a good 4 years of like grinding and learning, before I was really willing to put serious skin in the game.
You mentioned the, losing 4K over Thanksgiving weekend and how you were just sour. And I think this is a really important topic that I don't think I've discussed enough, on the Better Life, is to make your family comfortable with this hobby. We'll call it a hobby for, you can't, even whether you're winning or losing, it can't impact, right, the dynamic around you. And one of the things that I could proudly say that I have learned stoicism to the nth degree when it comes to sports betting. I could have I could have 40 to 50 soccer plays in going over Saturday and Sunday, right? You know, if all the leagues are on, I could easily have 40 plays over a weekend. And some weekends don't go well, Drew. Some weekends don't go well. And I have to be smiling. If I'm sour, if my wife's experience with me, if I say, oh, I lost a bunch today, she's not going to care what the dollar amount is. She's going to be like, well, fuck you for bringing that to me. Right.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah. How, I mean, how, what has your experience been after a weekend where like you're,
nothing goes right.
Yeah. Like, you know, tell me about the importance of stoicism in not only your ability to maintain, like not go on tilt and stuff, but just for the social dynamics around you.
Yeah. I mean, it's an important thing to learn about yourself in a lot of respects, not just with respect to gambling, right? You want to find some inner peace. You want to find balance. You want to be able to, you don't want to put so much emotion or stock into any given play, any given slate, any given weekend, any given week that it's, you know, reasonably going to affect your quality of life in a negative way. And going on tilt is something that I think a lot of people learn the hard way, what it feels like, how you can make bad decisions in the moment because you feel like your brain has tricked yourself that it's going to turn around and you need to get that, you know, endorphin hit of a win and that'll, you know, fix things. And that's nonsense, right? Like that's total, like, your brain chemistry, effing with you. And I think, the quicker you learn how to, find strategies to mitigate that, the more effective of a player you're going to be long-term. But specifically with dealing with loved ones in your day-to-day life, I have a couple of signs that I know, like, even if I'm just like a little grumpy, a little like, oh yeah, you want me to take out the trash? Okay, fine. Just a little on edge, and the first thing I think about if I'm in like a bad mood, if I say something that's a little out of line or a little on the line or I'm pushing buttons, the first thing I'll ask is this because I lost something? Like that's my go-to question that I ask myself. And if it is, then that kind of centers me. And I'm like, okay, like this isn't fair.
How was your demeanor after the Ravens lost? What was your demeanor then?
I didn't do too. So if they had lost to the Tennessee Titans in that first game, that would have hurt me bad. I didn't really hedge much on that. Yeah. That would have been a five-figure red decision, and I would have lost all of the equity I had in some really strong futures positions I took that had a ton of equity, and I would have been sad and angry, and I would have been miserable to be around. Probably would have just had to go for a long walk. Maybe I would have been like, I'm going to the office for the first time in 8 months. Like, I'll see you tomorrow. I can't trust myself not to be a total jackass around you. So
yeah,
I would have probably separated myself in some way, shape or form. When the Ravens lost to the Bills, it sucked. It was sad because there was an enormous potential payout if they continue to win, and realized, what I thought their true potential was. But by that point, I had some Chiefs futures. All I needed to do really to complete my portfolio was kind of get a decent sized Bills hedge in. And that was a no brainer. I mean, a lot of the sharp folks, the guys like Suma and Pizzola, who I do the matchbook pod, were both literally like, the Buffalo's winning. And I was like, all right, well, if enough people around you kind of have a strong opinion that something is going to happen, like, I didn't need to be like on an island, like, no, Ravens are plus EV in this spot. We're not hedging. It was like, okay, I need to cover this so that it's not a bloody loss here. And it wasn't too bad. I mean, ultimately I think it was not money lost that made me sad. It wasn't, or made me upset. It was just sort of like opportunity loss that made me sad, I guess. And, and even maybe more so, like, I just want there to be good, entertaining, competitive football. And I want the Ravens to realize, their potential at some point. And, I guess this is stupid as a handicapper to have this opinion, but like, I don't want people to be able to talk crap about Lamar and his passing. Like, I want him to show off one day and just in a big moment and really shine. And, like the Rams game where they went, 42-3, like if they could just do that in a big game and really just kind of, throw the gauntlet, like, hey, we are true contenders for a Super Bowl. This is how good our ceiling is. Then I think overall the NFL is a better product, a more entertaining product. The AFC is more competitive. Like, I don't want Pat Mahomes in 8 straight Super Bowls. Like, as cool as that would be for him to accomplish, like, I like a little competitive balance. Like, let's get a little, some interesting storylines here. So, it's it was a tough loss overall, but you know, I thankfully, because of the win versus the Titans, I was in a fine position to at least you know, break even on that.
So you you mentioned that you were interested in getting into like an international sport, and you considered soccer. You went tennis. By the way, I have Joker at +110 to win this whole thing. How's that bet look? Is that okay?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
What was your price?
+110. I'll admit that I know +1. I missed the 130 earlier on, but I've snagged 110 before the.
They gave him a tough draw. He's gonna have to do it himself. You know, he's not going to be able to, like, you know, sometimes, you know, he'll get the one seed and the top half of the draw will be pretty weak. And it's literally just let them fight it out down below and I will dispatch them in the final. It didn't work out that way this time. He's going to have to beat some of the tougher players himself. But his form looks great. And the Australian Open is his absolute best tournament of the year. And it's not close. I mean, he's eight time winner. Never lost here in the semifinals or finals. He is absolutely the class of the tournament. And if you're getting a plus money price, then, you know, you're probably going to be sitting in a place where he's -500 in the quarterfinal, -500 in the semifinal, and then about -200 or so in the final.
Yeah. So, One thing that I really appreciate about, you know, people, we talk about as sports betting gets bigger, markets going to get more efficient, stuff like that. But with games like tennis and soccer and these other, where there's constant movement of competition, right? Like every, so, you know, golf is another great example where there's new competitors every time, right? There's obviously the same competitors, but there's still a new pool of talent each year and stuff like that. I know that the sports books, like, one of the reasons why I love soccer, I know that the sports books don't know how good Hull City really is, even though they just got relegated the season before. I know that they don't know how to properly price them now going into a lower level at the beginning of the year. And it's I was watching your the Captain Jack sports show that he did when he had like the who's who of sports betting on there.
Sure.
One of the topics that came up was like how models and processes work early in the season, and then the markets can adjust. And I'm starting to see that with the English Football League this year. But I'm curious, what was it about tennis that drew you versus some of these other popular less bet sports?
Two things that really made it work for me. Number one, I had experience betting the slams already, so I had interest, and I had some actual reps betting it. But the major factor really was schedule. Tennis is the most interesting in May through September, early September. And if you follow the sports calendar and you're betting the NFL heavily from September to January, and you're betting the NBA from, you know, October to, you know, June, like, yeah, your games are winding down in the NBA come May when tennis is, you know, is getting real hot. And then similarly, you know, tennis ends right at Labor Day, right when the NFL starts, you know. So as far as always kind of having one major sport to handicap, it fit in my calendar perfectly. And there's daily action. There's kind of a unique feel to the knockout style of a tournament. You know, it feels like college basketball, March Madness to a degree. Every single week you get one, a little one, you know, and the slams are, you know, 128, competitors all going for it. And the timing is cool because the best tournaments in the summer, especially, they all happen in the daytime. So you actually can, you know, keep track of what's going on, listen to it while you're working or watch it while you're working, do whatever. And, you know, just it's a perfect fit schedule wise. Sure, you feel some of that about soccer. Just, you know, having it on while you're kind of, you know, doing stuff during the day is pretty cool. It's distracting, sure. But, distracting. You know, sometimes you want a distraction, you know. So, yeah. You know, all through the summer, you know, every tournament winds down on the weekends. So you don't have time commitments handicapping watching tennis on Saturday and Sunday, really, other than the semifinals and finals. And usually those are pretty quick, right? And or there's no edge. So you just pass, right? most of the action is during the week. I really just can't say enough about how ideal the schedule is for my lifestyle, my life, in terms of, you know, when I wanted to bet and when I wanted to watch. And because I don't have any other connection to tennis at all. I was a country club kid growing up, but I was a swimmer. And my parents gave me tennis lessons 2 summers in a row. And I was like, this is stupid. I don't like this sport. I'm not good at it. I don't like this. So back to the kind of competitive spirit there. But the, it's a sport that has a ton of data, tons of matches. And so if you're using statistical analysis models, whatever, there is no shortage of ways you can try to attack the market. It's a robust market. It's relatively high liquidity. I've never had anywhere I've ever bet be like, no, we're not taking your tennis action. So that's encouraging. It's a perfect complement to NBA and NFL, really.
The big draw for me to soccer was the sheer volume week.
Volume. Yeah. Same. Yeah.
Sheer volume. Yeah. I've heard you on the deep dive use the term rec plus. Let's say, is that something like, did you get that from someone? You're the first person I've heard like use that term.
I think first person I heard say it was Professor Shine.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard that deep dive we did with him, but one of the things that we learned about the deep dive specifically and its ability to help us become better players is it opened up networking opportunities for people who were interested in coming on the platform and talking about their process. Right. And it was like this, maybe the second year we did it, maybe the third, I can't remember. We started reaching out to players who I knew were advantage players, like period. I know these guys are advantage players. I want to talk to them. And it got to the point where they were like, the conversations we were having before and after the podcast was recorded with them were like the most valuable stuff of all, you know, like, oh man, they're really telling us some invaluable nuggets of information here. And, you know, I was using Zoom or GoToMeeting instance and just recording the whole thing. So I was getting the entire conversation, and I was just chopping, you know, I'd say, okay, give me 10 seconds of quiet so I know where to chop. And then we'll record the podcast episode and put the title track on and post it, blah, blah, blah. And so I get this whole conversation we had with Shine before the podcast recorded, and we talked for like an hour, and it was some of the best stuff that we've ever really got, a lot of history. He's got just a ton of, actual experience doing this going back to the 80s, and so his perspective was really valuable. And I think at some point he was like, yeah, I kind of think of bettors as like different classifications. There's like your pros, there's your recreational bettors. But in between, there's people who are recreational in terms of like, it's not going to make or break their life if they don't win or grind a profit. But at the same time, they're like dedicated not to lose. And, it's a little more than a hobby. They're not throwing funny money around. They're actually trying to make informed bets. They're trying to make plus EV bets. They care about this. They want to improve. And he called it Rec Plus. And I think that's a very fair description for a lot of the people that listen to our podcast. A lot of people that really engage with our content, on Twitter, I think are people who they're not just in it for the LOLs. They are like actually trying to get better at this. They don't want to lose. They don't want to pay the entertainment tax. They want to get paid for being entertained, which is, I think, a very noble goal.
So I think when I heard you say it, I was like, that is a brilliant term. I'm sure the same realization you had when you heard Professor Shine say it. I think this is where the opportunity in sports betting content really is in the Rec Plus sector. Not like the I keep on going back to Spanky only because I think he's the right example on this. He is so successful. His processes are to be admired. I can't replicate that. Like when he talks about his process, like I can't get a lot of action. I don't have the money, let alone the outs or the whatever the processes. So it's good to hear like his philosophy on it and be able to apply that. Same thing with choose anybody who's a pro.
Oh, yeah.
But I need to hear someone similar to you and Andy, similar, I know that's like, sure. it's good hearing people who take it seriously, who can go, who can have the same processes that I can replicate. I think that is where so much of this, that's where so much of the, there's so much more opportunity for that kind of content. Are you, I mean, you clearly are seeing it with the growth of your podcast, but would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. There's literally no, there's nothing gained in trying to appeal to the fish. They're just going to bet whatever they bet.
That's a really great point. That's a really great point. Yeah.
There's very little, there's a teeny tiny slice that qualifies as pro. And for the most part, they're not even consuming content, right? Like right. If they are, it's maybe, you know, it's just like, you know, gossipy kind of what are the other pros doing, you know, or
that's
like,
the only reason.
Yeah, right.
Oh, the whole podcast on that.
Goodness. Yeah. Right. So there's nothing at that at either end of the spectrum, really. And then the recreational players, they are, you know, it's a huge volume of people. A lot of them are new to the game, and you're not going to be able to communicate to ones that don't at least have some interest in getting better, right? But that, I would say that it makes sense to try to target and create content for the Rec Plus better, because now there may be a couple thousand in the US who have really kind of taken their game up, stepped their game up over the course of, you know, a couple of years playing, right? In 5 years, there could be 100,000, right? I mean, like there's going to be a survivorship, you know, process of everyone who's entering the game now at the rec level, who either decides they don't like it, this isn't for me, I don't mind paying the entertainment tax, I'll continue playing $50 plays and just whatever happens, happens. Or they will get a taste of for it and, you know, try to figure out, hey, I want to win at this. I don't want to lose anymore. And that, you know, that's going to be the fastest growing of the different populations, in my opinion. And at some point, that's going to be all the betters, because the fish are going to be out of the game. You know, they'll be tapped out. You know, the pros were never into the content game in the first place. And, you know, the recreational players will kind of continually come in and grow up or grow out. And, you know, I do think that in terms of like who the intended audience is for sports betting content, you should have in mind someone who has a couple years experience, wants to do this for the next 5 to 10 years, doesn't want to lose, doesn't accept losing, is looking, asking questions, trying to develop strategies, tools, angles, models, you name it, you know, just to find an edge. And, you know, those are the people that are consuming the most content. They're probably high dollar value bettors as well. So there's lots of reasons you would want to try to connect with those people. You know, you can sell them expensive whiskey with their winnings, and, you know, sell them good wine, sell them, you know, high quality steaks, whatever they're fancy. You know, there's a good, you know, reason to try to capture that audience, even beyond just the fact that it's people like us. Right.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how quick, like you said, like the fish can only last so long, right? I mean, everybody, all the squares who took Chiefs -3.5, right? Because they were like, I'm going to bet on the Chiefs. And it just happened to be at 3.5 when they opened their app. And they're like, well, I don't know how this works, and just bet it anyways, right? Those bettors aren't going to be around for a while. And I think that there is, the large appetite really is in the Rec Plus world, especially, is I just don't want to lose my money, right? I want to, you know, a little bit of growth would be nice. It'd be nice to hit a big future. It'd be nice but really, let's be honest. I might edge out a little bit of profit here or there, but the real thing is, I want to be able to. I want this to sell to sustain itself, right?
Exactly. And like I was, you know, kind of hinting at, like, if you can get to the place where you are being entertained by this and also getting paid, then you have kind of hit the sweet spot.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I've only had a couple of instances in my life where I was like, huh, I really nailed that. And I had Megan Rapinoe at 22-1 to get the golden ball in the Women's World Cup. When it came around, I was like, you know, like that was one of the few instances where I was like, I think I'm good enough at this to not lose money, right? Yeah. Like this isn't going to supplement an income. I'm not quitting the day job, but I think I've now hit that point where I'm not going to lose money anymore.
I think a lot of people go through that too, where they make a bet or they make a handicap and they see the outcome and they're like, you know what? Like that process worked. I figured something out here. There's obviously, like, you shouldn't stop there and say, well, I've got the game figured out, period. And I can, you know, not worry about trying to continue to improve. That's obviously not a winning strategy long-term, because the more dynamic you can be, the more adaptable you can be, the longer you're going to last as a winner. Cause you know, everybody's edge eventually gets ground into the market. But there's definitely an awakening. Where you make a play that's a sound handicap and you're rewarded by the correct result. Those are really important moments as far as growing as a player.
Drew, we've gone over time. You've been so gracious to hang out with me. I could talk to you for hours about this stuff. In the future, I do hope to have a group discussion with a handful of Rec Plus content creators to talk more about the space, opportunities, ways that we're providing our audience. You will get the invite for that, and hopefully we can talk more then.
Cool. That sounds great. And appreciate you having me on. This is cool to be on Twitch and get all this feedback. It's, you know, Twitch is tough to crack, but that's cool that you're curating an audience there. That seems like it's a great way to engage with an audience on here. And
all right, Drew, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Best of luck.
Again, big thanks to Mr. Drew Dinsick for joining me on the podcast. It was fun doing it over Twitch. Twitch.tv/TheBetterLife. I've done a few things now over there. We did a little community live stream. Y'all loved that. A lot of y'all came over for that. That was fun. Vito, Adam Bauer, Mark Duvall, Traeger. That was a lot of fun. We'll do that again in the future. We'll figure out the best way to do those. I'm going to record the interviews via live stream, via Twitch, when the guest is comfortable with that. And you may be thinking, like, well, why would we bother, you know, tuning into that when we can just wait for the podcast? If you listened to the interview that I did with Drew over Twitch and then listened to the podcast now, you probably realize, oh, hey, there's a couple things missing. Yeah, I edit things out. Not everything said and a conversation needs to be published, but it comes out in the conversation, right? So if you want to get the uncut version of an interview, pay attention. I'm posting these over Twitter, right? I'm going to get better about using Facebook and Instagram for notifications and stuff like that, but that's where I've been putting it out. As soon as I know that something's going to happen on Twitch, I'll tweet it out so you can follow along if you'd like. The next thing that's happening... Okay, the next thing that you can tune into, Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, so the 16th, February 16th, at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, twitch.tv/TheBetterLife, Mark Duvall and I are gonna record the next episode of Better Viewing, and we're going to go over four episodes of Cheers, the show Cheers, that has gambling references. And so we'll be doing that live via Twitch. Of course, it'll get put into the podcast feed. Don't fret. If you can't make that, you will get a chance to listen to it. But like I said, you get the opportunity to interact with us via the chat, and you get the uncut version of the conversation. So there's that. A handful of you have copped some Better Life merch in the past week. I appreciate that. Your merch is on the way. I just dropped a handful of things in the mail. Hoodies and t-shirts for the Struggle Is Real design. The video poker royal flush that misses the one card. That is now available in a hoodie. TheBetterLife.us/merch is where you can cop that. Use promo code YO11 for 11% off of your purchase. I am about to, I just put in the order for the next and last book in the Better Life Book Club. All of you who are in the Better Life Book Club on Patreon, patreon.com/abetterlife. The last book is underway, and when I make the transition to that no longer being the book club, I'll send a message to everybody to let you know. But The Vapors by David Hill is going to be that book. So, you know, as I'm sure many of you have been able to tell, with, you know, so how I've engaged myself on Twitter, trying this new Twitch thing, you know, I'm trying some things over here at The Better Life, all right? I'm trying some things over here. I realize that, you know, there is a limited amount of content and whatnot in all mediums. So, you know, I'm trying to do what I can to put some more content out there, find different ways for us to engage with each other and enjoy these wonderful games that we enjoy inside the casino, inside our sports books, etc. So if you have an idea, let me know. I'm willing to consider things. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at The Better Life. I'm gonna roll out. I'm gonna go live on Twitch here, actually, in about 30 minutes after I post this. None of you will hear this in time to know that, but that's actually what I'm about to do. I found a casino game in Steam. It's like a virtual casino. It's fake money, right? Obviously, that's what it is. It's not real money, of course, but yeah, it's kind of neat. It was the best casino software I could find in Steam, so I'm gonna try it out. So hopefully some of you join me there. Hope everybody did okay with their bets over the Super Bowl. Hope everybody enjoyed the interview with Drew, and I hope to see all of you on Twitch when Mark and I go over the show Cheers on Tuesday. On behalf of Drew Jinsik, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night and good luck.